Welcome to Explorations of the Heart and Soul, guided meditations by Australian Zen teacher Andrew Tutel. Find out more at ordinarymind.com.au. Andrew's Zen teachings are made possible by donations from people like you.
Thank you all for being here today. Thank you for showing up so that we can meet some Dharma together. I really wanted to share with you something which I found quite powerful. It's a Christian prayer, and it leads nicely into some lovely Zen ways of looking at things as well. And this prayer you might have heard of. It's called Prayer of St. Francis of Assisi, Prayer for Peace. It's beautiful. I won't read all of it. The bits I'm going to read are this person's obviously very heartfelt desire to transform and to be a benefit in the world. So this is St. Francis, so he's addressing this to God and the point is that we can tap into what is really heartfelt and sincere for ourselves. And he's obviously a person of enormous spiritual or religious or great spiritual impulse. Which we might find inspiration in. So he asks, in his prayer, he asks to be an instrument of peace. Where there is hatred, let me sow love. Where there is injury, pardon. Where there is doubt, faith. Where there is despair, hope. Where there is darkness, light. Where there is sadness, joy. May I not so much seek to be consoled as to console, to be understood as to understand, to be loved as to love. After this, he says a little more, which we might return to later if we have time. So I just want to reflect on these words where he's sincerely asking, he's totally saying, I want to be transformed. I want to be someone who is like this. And he's describing how he wants to be. Let me be someone who's not just seeking to be consoled, who is more able to console. Let me be someone who doesn't seek to be understand, but offers understanding to others. Who doesn't seek to be loved, but to offer love to others. And, you know, these are really beautiful impulses. And it brings us back to the sense of what it is to have a vow. So this is his deep heartfelt vow to be transformed and to be this spiritual being, to realize this spiritual nature within himself. So he's articulating what he would like to become. And he's recognizing what it is. And then, who knows, with a heartfelt wish for these things, how we might be transformed. In terms of love, he says, may I not so much seek to be loved as to love. And this brings to mind, this brought to mind for me a koan. It's rare to find koans about love. But there is one in the transmission of light. And actually, I met this listening to Susan Murphy, who's also written about it in her book, Red Thread Zen, which I'm looking at right now. In this encounter, which is case 41, a monk asks Dao P, I do not love what worldly people love. I wonder, Your Reverence, what is it that you love? And Dao P replies, I have already become like this. So here we have this admonition from St. Francis, let me be someone who isn't so much focused on getting love for myself as completely turning around, completely turning that around and being a loving being. And, you know, this is a really significant part of Buddhism, this idea of completely turning around how we may have previously thought about or looked at our life and how we live it. So this is this complete turning around and opening. So let me just repeat this again. The monk says, I do not love what worldly people love. I wonder, Master, what is it that you love? And the master says, I have already become like this. I just read a little bit from Susan Murphy here. I have already become like this is a properly strange and oblique looking kind of reply. Is he avoiding the question? Or freely revealing himself in a complete response to it. So he's revealing in this reply, he's revealing something that's deeply possible with all of us who practice, which is to that complete turning around and opening. And in that complete turning around and opening, everything is revealed and nothing is excluded. So this is a very fulsome expression of what it is to be a human being and the fruit of a deep vow, a practice. Now I'm just going to turn to another koan. This is a lovely story from The Hidden Lamp, which is a collection of koans about women. And I'll read this through twice. It's a very nice story. It's called Seven Wise Women in the Charnel Grounds. Seven wise sisters planned a spring journey. One of them said, "Sisters, instead of going to a park to enjoy the spring flowers, let's go together to see the charnel grounds." The other said, "That place is full of decaying corpses. What is such a place good for?" The first woman replied, "Let's just go. Very good things are there." When they arrived, one of them pointed to a corpse and said, "There is a person's body. Where has the person gone?" "What?" another said. "What did you say?" And all seven sisters were immediately enlightened. A koan with a happy ending, as we often see. I'll just read it again so you can capture the feel of this koan. Seven wise sisters planned a spring journey. One of them said, "Sisters, instead of going to a park to enjoy the spring flowers, let's go together to see the charnel grounds." The others said, "That place is full of decaying corpses. What is such a place good for?" The first woman replied, "Let's just go. Very good things are there." When they arrived, one of them pointed to a corpse and said, "There is a person's body. Where has the person gone?" "What?" another said. "What did you say?" And all seven sisters were immediately enlightened. This is actually just the first half of this koan. There's more, but there's quite a lot here already. It has a lovely feel to it of these enthusiastic practitioners who are curious enough to go to a charnel ground instead of to go and look at flowers in the park. How interesting that one would make a choice like that. So they asked the person who made the suggestion, "What is such a place good for?" And she says, "Let's just go. Very good things are there." So what is such a place good for? There's a teisho on each of the koans in this collection. There's 100 koans and 100 reflections from different women Zen teachers. And this one has a very nice reflection from Bonnie Myotai Treese. So what is such a place good for? What reason can we have to not reject and turn towards that which is uncomfortable? Very good things are there, apparently. What happens when we stop pushing away what's uncomfortable and are able to let things be as they are? Can we explore the charnel grounds of our own lives? And this one specifically is about mortality. And this perhaps is one of the most challenging things in terms of being attached, is to our sense of self and to the notion that we are mortal and subject to birth and death. So what would the women see that would make them become suddenly enlightened? I think this relates to the sense of really being able to open ourselves lovingly to all of life. Like Tao Pi, to understand that to love is to become like this. No need, only harm in pushing away what we find uncomfortable, pretending things aren't as they are, desiring things to be other than they are. Life and death here is like rejecting any unpleasant aspect of life. So, what is this opening that happens when we stop pushing against and creating walls and barriers and I like this and I don't like that, and flowers are good and charnel grounds are bad? What if you go and see the flowers and they're rotting? What then? They haven't bloomed yet. Or are we going to be contingent on what is happening around us to love and appreciate our life? This remarkable grace of being alive. So I just want to reflect on this turning around that St. Francis so wholeheartedly is pointing himself towards, is striving for, this complete turning around, and how this is seeing the truth of life and death, the truth of a human life, and the truth of all of our lives together. I think it's very beautiful that not just one person awakens, but all of them awaken together. So what is the significance of this? Can we view ourselves as seven separate people? Sure, there's all seven people with their different personalities and ways of dressing, no doubt, characteristics. So, do we need to view ourselves as separate, even if we are different? So this implication that awakening is equally for all, regardless of their characteristics, and that's our Bodhisattva vow, is the awakening of all. And that this happens instantaneously with these seven women is, of course, very charming indeed. Now I will just turn to something from Dogen, because there's a Dogen fascicle called Birth and Death. You know, all of these things we're looking at here today point Two, this recognition of our life, birth and death, all of it. What do we do with it? How do we live it? This fascicle, Birth and Death, Shoji, by Dogen, begins with him quoting two Zen masters. And this is how it goes. Because a Buddha is in birth and death, there is no birth and death. It is also said, because a Buddha is not in birth and death, a Buddha is not deluded by birth and death. So just pausing there for a moment. We go to the charnel grounds, we turn to our life, we face the difficult things. We're not deluded by the existence of difficulties and by mortality. And yet, how is it that we live well in that? We live well in that because we recognize it. And when we are alive, we are fully alive. And we are more fully alive because we recognize the truth. We recognize that things aren't going to go how we prescribe them to go. And we can't boss life around and tell it what should happen when, including birth and death. And then we can appreciate the very great surprise in being alive. It's very surprising. Constantly surprising. So, by being present to our life, we don't feel trapped by birth and death. Right now, we're sitting here and we're alive, and we experience that. And when we experience illness and approaching death, then that's our experience. Always identically with what is happening and not separating ourselves from it and trying to be somewhere else. And it's really in this that we can live in the poignancy of our own life, of our own temporary life. I'll just read a little more from this. Here Dogen admonishes us not to search for Buddha outside of birth and death. He says, just understand that birth and death is itself nirvana. There is nothing such as birth and death to be avoided. There is nothing such as nirvana to be sought. When you realize this, only when you realize this are you free from birth and death. And right at the end of this fascicle, he says, there is a simple way to become Buddha. When you refrain from unwholesome actions, are not attached to birth and death, and are compassionate toward all sentient beings. Respectful to seniors and kind to juniors, not excluding or desiring anything, with no designing thoughts or worries, you will be called a Buddha. Do not seek anything else. Thank you for your time.
Jack, are you happy to receive questions or comments?
Always.
Okay, so if you want to ask a question or comment, just do a gusho and Jack will call on you.
Bill, did you want to say something?
Yeah, I was just going to ask, would you be able to put the recording of this one up? I think Ginny might really love to hear some of this stuff.
Okay, sure. If you'd like that, if you think she'd like that, sure.
Yeah, that'd be awesome if you can.
Yeah, of course.
Jack?
Oh, yes. Was this Scott? Was it?
No, it's Nettie. Well, maybe Scott too. Okay, you go ahead, Scott.
There you go. Oh, Jack, I just want to say how very much I enjoyed your talk, and I want to thank you for bringing St. Francis into the Buddhist realm of wisdom. I appreciate that too. He's one of my favorite. I left the Christian church very young, but I have great affection and fondness for St. Francis. So it's very nice to hear him being folded into the wisdom of birth and death and devotion. I think there's something that you kind of pointed to there. You didn't say out, you didn't make it explicit, but the kind of devotion that there can be a kind of devotional approach to Buddhist practice. I don't hear it talked about much, but that's sort of part of my orientation always has been, and I think you're bringing St. Francis into the fold like that sort of enriches that idea about the for devotional aspect of full practice and surrender into whatever is. So thank you anyway. I much enjoyed your talk.
Thank you so much, Scott. Yeah, because it sort of brings in, this deeper sense of what it is to have a vow. And we do have our vows in Buddhism too, that we can make very personal and heartfelt.
Right.
Yeah. And I would also add, actually in the Sambo Zen tradition, there's a lot of Christian Zen people. And people would say it's not compatible, but they would obviously disagree.
Yeah. It's your turn.
Thank you. I was just thinking about the teaching of right here is nirvana, and crossing to the other shore is just right here on this shore, and I don't so much wish to be loved as to love is exactly that, you know, that's how we reach nirvana, is to not have self-concern. I mean, have a self-concern in the same way that everyone has to be a bit concerned about themselves, but no more than that. And to love rather than be loved, to understand others rather than to be understood. There it is. There's nirvana right there.
Yeah.
And the other thought, by the way, I kept laughing all through your talk, Jack, and Zoo kept saying to me, "You're on mute," because I kept laughing. It was such a beautiful, it was such a beautiful talk. So moving. And the seven women too, you know, that question got asked, and by them reflecting on that question for themselves, they woke up. You know? Yes. Body is there, but where is the person?
Where is the person? Yeah.
And they spontaneously all answered it and woke up. And thank you.
Thanks, Nettie.
Thank you, Jack. A beautiful talk, and I really love the way you gave a lot of space for reflection in the talk, and repeated things so I could listen and not get too distracted. Thank you.
Pleasure. Rain.
Jack.
Hello.
Hello. You know, I spent about 23 years in the Catholic tradition before I became a Buddhist. So I grew up listening to St. Francis, and my dad trained to be a priest, and all kinds of priests and nuns in my family. When I got to Buddhism, I thought, oh good, there's no God. I don't really like that one much. And I think after all this time, I'm seeing that I've misunderstood the teaching fundamentally about what it means to love rather than to seek to be loved. You know, because the thing that you don't love isn't out there, it's right here. And if you can't love that, then you have no ground. You just have the thought of a self that's hitting itself with a stick for not loving enough.
Yeah. That's very true, because it's easy to turn something like this into a stick. Oh, I should be more loving to others or something. Yeah,
that's right. That's right.
Yeah. When really we come back to self acceptance.
Yeah. So, and for me, it's right there. Yeah, and it for me, it's right there in the wording of that St. Francis prayer. Is don't seek to be understood, seek to understand, including yourself.
Right.
Don't look outside yourself for all of that. Offer it, including to yourself, you know, offer understanding to the one in you that hates everybody, and the one in you that wants to be loved, and the one in you that put their robe on because they thought it would look cool. Yeah?
Yeah, lovely.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks, Jack. That was really lovely and quiet. And the window behind looks like it's full of snow, which it isn't, but it's interesting since you've just come from snow country. It seemed followed you.
Followed by the Santa Fe snow.
There's a poem, Jack. Look forward to seeing it.
I came back to the subtropics, and what did I find?
The snow
had decided to come too.
The snow of Reverend Wicks. Thanks, Jack.
Thanks, Ryan. Sarah.
Thank you. I really enjoyed the talk. I have a question because I know that you were just at a long intensive and doing a lot of Zazen. Well, I was too. And yes. I noticed that during those periods of intense sitting where you're, you know, long periods of sitting, I feel like sometimes things kind of rise up, you know, from maybe the subconscious or. And sometimes it's painful memories from childhood and just painful stuff. And I was wondering if that happened to you and how that was, how did you deal with that?
Yes, absolutely. Things that I've harbored and felt painful or felt resentment about or something like that. Yes. Like that's not fair, kind of, or things like that. Yeah, for sure. And I suppose what I often do is, well, a couple of things. One of them is, you know, kind of following the teachings of Joko Beck, which is when something uncomfortable arises, not to avoid it, and in the sense of don't keep turning it into a story, feel it in your body. So put your attention where it hurts in your body. Because sometimes the chitter chatter is a way to avoid it, and we keep saying how unfair it is and that sort of thing. But when we can be humble and just actually feel that pain, yeah, that really hurt that happened. It really, really hurt. Admit that it hurt and really feel it. And also for me, that plays into, I think, have you read Ben Connolly's book on the 30 verses, like Yogacara sort of teachings? And so the idea of the storehouse consciousness, right? So we have a storehouse consciousness that stores those painful things that we haven't processed, kind of until we can process them. And so if something arises during sitting, then how can I process that wholesomely? No, that's an opportunity for me to process it wholesomely. And that's to really experience it, not turn away from it. Recognize that that's what it is. That it's a storehouse allowing me to process anything that I haven't processed, you know. And I think we carry the storehouse around with us all the time, and it colors everything that happens. And so the more that, you know, we sit and we get to process these things, the better, and we can be very humble with it, you know, and understand what it is and be humble. It's normal to have these things and to have to sit with them. And it's also a good reason to do long retreats, Because as much as we can process these things, the more space we have for turning around, for turning ourselves around and opening, like the lotus flower.
Thank you. I did read something by Ben Connolly when I was away, and it was from Tricycle Magazine, but it was about dealing with the storehouse.
Oh,
and
really?
it was a practice that I thought it kind of worked for me, but he said you can do it any time, like during the day. Say some thought arises and you start to get trapped by it, and you know how that happens. And he said to like take three deep breaths and then make a list of 10 things that 10 causes and conditions that contribute to how you feel in the present moment. And he wrote like a list of, he gave an example of 10 things, like the sound of frogs croaking or the sound of birds, or he wrote down like white privilege, you know, growing up and dealing with that. But and it could be any kind of 10 things that contribute to how you feel in the present moment, just to be aware of what's creating that feeling and then just let them go. So you're just being aware and you're saying, oh, that's okay. I understand why I feel like this. And then you just kind of let it go, knowing that, you know, it will pass. And that sort of helped me.
Okay. Right. Yeah. No, I haven't seen that. Thanks, Sarah. Sharing that. It's finish time. So now we finish with the great vows.
Inva numberless, I vow to save them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless. I vow to enter them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable. I vow to become it.